welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
In the process of buying a 30-year-old ambulance in 2004, sight unseen, in the opinion of most people, I've gone crazy. Listening to Mr. Bible from Homebush Motors in Sydney make his sales pitch on the phone, I think they might have a point. Just wait till you put your foot down out on the highway. It's like having a peach underneath, and the peach doesn't bruise. An icon, that's what you'll be buying. It was not so long ago that an invalid scooter had been my only transport. Even when I'd set it to rabbit, the fastest speed, the blind nun from down the road could overtake me on her cane. Before the scooter, there was the wheelchair. In the winter sun of 2002, the spokes of its wheels cast shadows along the hospital patio in such a way that I couldn't stop crying. I'd had a 7-year-long struggle to walk due to a form of multiple sclerosis that defied diagnosis, but that wasn't why I was being slid in and out of wheelchairs. The open-heart surgery I underwent in 2002 following an emergency diagnosis of an infection in my heart is like a penumbral eclipse of my life that can still seem incomprehensible. Why didn't I get myself to hospital sooner, before I was so nearly a corpse? How could it be possible that in so fervently following the advice of a macrobiotic practitioner whose treatment banned any recourse to Western medicine, I became part of a calamity so huge I almost died? There were reasons. Imagine after a lifelong passion for physical activity, suddenly finding movement itself becoming a mystery. Imagine, at the age of 31, beginning to stagger like a Kurt Vonnegut syphilitic. Next, horrible feelings running along certain stretches of your skin, as if this were where Peter Piper's peck of pickled peppers had lodged. As is common with multiple sclerosis, before diagnosis came many misdiagnoses, everything from the trivial, my GP attributing my malaise to the effect of leaning on my elbow as I sat at my desk, to the extreme. The first MRI was to look for signs of multiple sclerosis, but nothing was showing. Although no neurologist was convinced that my symptoms were stemming from an old horse riding injury to my neck, pressure was intensifying that I must agree, the sooner the better, to major spinal surgery. In my increasing alarm, I turned to the huge range of alternative health practitioners that anyone with an affliction in the 21st century might feel familiar with. I tried Reiki, traditional Chinese medicine, holotropic breathing, reflexology, and kinesiology. Under the directives of this or that healer, I drank disgusting molasses and soya milk brews. I ate charcoal and seaweed. I fasted. I looked into colonic irrigations, iridology, numerology, Feldenkrais, Alexander technique, Bowen therapy, bone massage. Again, I consulted a range of GPs and specialists. Again, I was scanned for multiple sclerosis. Again, no sign of any of the telltale scar lesions around nerves in the brain or spinal column. Vitamin B12 deficiency, syphilis, HIV, hepatitis C were also all ruled out. In the last MRI scan, The bit of osteoarthritis in my neck was neither better nor worse. A plump, small-fingered neurosurgeon diffidently suggested that a registrar could operate. We could book you in within the month. We'd come in through the front of your neck and put in a self-drilling cage. Take out the bony deposits around C5. It might help, but only in terms of you not deteriorating. I've seen necks on 90-year-olds in far worse shape than your own, yet with none of your symptoms. A fortnight later, by chance, I met a horse rider who'd had just such an operation on her neck. One operation had led to three. Her throat looked like the site of a chainsaw massacre. Some kind of permanent intravenous morphine drip only slightly numbed her pain. I went home and, piling all my MRI scans and x-rays into a barrow, wheeled them out into a paddock to bury. Apart from mental anguish, I was in no actual pain apart from financial. If I were to add up what I had spent on alternative health practices, I could have had the deposit on two, maybe three houses. Only Dr. Seuss-style verse could properly convey some of the nonsense I again was forlorn enough to try. I was wrapping my middle in castor oil compresses. I was following the fit-for-life diet. Eat 32 spirulina tablets three times a day. Cast out your demons. Talk to angels. On the bicycle it was becoming increasingly impossible to pedal. I hurtled down hills with affirmations on my tongue. Every day and in every way I'm getting better and better. Except I was not. On certain days the creeping sensations began entering my eyes, and I feared I was starting to go blind with something Western medicine had no name for. At this point, I encountered the healing modality known as macrobiotics. At first, it seemed a wise philosophy, shot through with a spare Taoist aesthetic. After so much gobbledygook, I found it irresistible. Add to this fact that I soon became the charismatic macro man's lover, and you will begin to understand how, in my despair, I helped to dig the doom that would overtake me 2 years on. This had nothing to do with my walking mystery, but was untreated endocarditis. My heart was infected. 5.5 months of physical agony and every new symptom gravely interpreted by my partner as my body being at last strong enough to detox. After the ordeal my body has been through, how much easier seem the practicalities of buying the old F100 ambulance. As Mr. Bible rants on, the afternoon breeze is causing the calico flower bag, safety pinned to the back of my old scooter, to shift out and in. And the prior owner used the ambulance for camping, I ask. More or less, mate, more or less. A bit eggs and ham in the back, but nothing the feminine touch can't rectify. Much more than Mr. Bible, it's a line out of Juno Barnes's Nightwood, scrawled in texture onto the flower bag, which I so long to believe, that the unendurable is the beginning of the curve of joy. The ambulance is a gamble, I know, but not as big a gamble as staying motionless in Mary Street. Nothing chills me more than the thought of the institutionalisation that happened to my grandfather. Diagnosed at the age of 22 with the form of chronic progressive multiple sclerosis I'm living with, he eventually went blind. Just before he was put on the top floor of a hospice to die, they amputated both his legs. This flat I've been renting on the hoof Mary Street corner, once such a sanctuary after open heart surgery, has come to feel just like a smaller version of the Grafton prison diagonally opposite my bedroom window. The bricks of the flat resemble the worst Weston's biscuits, adrift with flecks of inedible choc chips. On every side of me are frail neighbours in their 80s. When they kill ants in the patch of grass we share, fumes from the spray drift into my flat's kitchen window. As far as my eye can see, outside every neat house in every direction, stand red and yellow wheelie bins ready for collection. It's as if I'm stranded in some giant version of a board game for fat children, too bored to play. Something in me wants to scream, needs to run. In 2.5 months of searching, the ambulance is the only camper to fit the budget of a writer living below the poverty line on a disability pension of $228 a week. Once I sell the little white car to which I graduated from the scooter, there might even be enough for refurbishments. And it's yellow, I check with Mr. Bible. Harper's Gold, Gillian, Harper's Gold. So that in the 2 weeks it takes to organise transport of the ambulance to northern New South Wales, I keep wondering whether it's going to spangle in the way of that ex-girlfriend who danced topless up Oxford Street one Mardi Gras inside her replica of the Melbourne Arts Centre spire, or whether it will be more of a Christmas beetle gleam. But the moment I see my ambulance coming through light autumn rain into a South Grafton service station, I realise the colour is that of the tail lights of Calyptohincus funereus, the yellow-tailed black cockatoos that always scream upriver when people I love die. From a distance, my camper, loaded on the back of a transporter, is a faded, ochre-yellow wonder around which Astro Boy-bodied Hyundais are stacked like matchbox cars. Because I'm so scared, I know already that I'll call my camper Ant and Bee after the Angela Banner books, which brought inestimable comfort through all the early years of my 1960s childhood. Be careful, says the transport driver when the seatbelt anchor flies into my hand as I buckle up. Making my way into the heavy afternoon traffic burning south on the Pacific Highway, it's incredible no police siren stops me. With no speedometer, no rear vision mirrors and windscreen wipers that don't work, I take my maiden journey in Anton B. I don't care that I'm about to find out there isn't a nut on the bolt holding the driver's seat onto a piece of ply. So what that the camper conversion described by Mr. Bible appears to be an esky chucked in the back and a bit of old foam ocky-strapped to the roof? All will surely be fixable. On this first drive, how marvellous seem the bends integral to the eccentricity of the Clarence River Bridge. From my lofty new driving height, the old trees of Grafton have never been so golden. How fantastic, how safe this great bonnet of yellow iron stretching out in protection. Ah, the headiness of the promise of aloneness, of finally being, afflictions and all, the solo driver of my own life.
Listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.